Well, hello and welcome to today's special episode of Breaking the Taboo. And for our regular listeners, you might be surprised to see us doing a second episode this week, as we tend to do a thematic episode every Thursday on different topics that relate to mums and families affected by birth trauma. But anyone who's been following the news this week will have seen that on Monday, there was a major announcement by the government, their first big policy announcement on maternity care. So I've decided to do a special episode this week to talk about the government's announcement, but also to talk a bit more about the UK government and Parliament and what we can do from a policy perspective to improve maternity care in the UK. So I'm delighted to have in the studio with us today a good friend and former colleague of mine, who is Rosie Duffield, the Member of Parliament for Canterbury. She's also the co-chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Birth Trauma and co-chaired the UK's Birth Trauma Inquiry in the House of Commons last year with me. So welcome, Rosie, to the show, and it's fantastic to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And just for listeners who are not aware of the announcement, let me just start off by saying, what is it that Wes Streeting announced this week? So the Department for Health and Social Care have announced a new national maternity investigation, which they're launching to drive improvements in NHS care on maternity and neonatal services. And it's being framed by the government as kind of providing truth to families who've suffered harm and a way to urgently improve care and safety. And I think we should start off by saying that over the last few weeks and months, the Secretary of State has been meeting with bereaved families and with charities and parents to really better understand the way to improve standards in maternity care. So this is being framed, Rosie, as very much an attempt by the government to have a new package of immediate actions to boost accountability and safety for the government. So I suppose my first question to you is, do you think that that is the case? What has the government announced this week? And do you think it will make any real change in improving maternity care in the UK?
I really hope so. I mean, you and I have both been through several health secretaries. In my case, it's 8 health secretaries in 8 years. And, you know, we do sort of, everything starts again when you get a new one, and they promise things, and they promise to look at things, and they promise to inquire about things, and they promise to listen to people and hear things from parents. And, you know, I think we both felt we'd made a lot of progress in the last government, in the last parliament, with the health secretary, who was the only female health secretary, I think, that I've served under, I think. I can't remember any other women. And Victoria Atkins did make a women's health strategy sort of the heart of what she was doing. And that gave us, I know, great hope at the time. So what we want is just not more of the same platitudes and the same investigations, but actual action. And we did so much of that hard work for them. We told them what needed to happen. So instead of starting from the beginning and asking different questions and coming to pretty much the same conclusions, I would imagine, let's start actually actioning some of the things that we've all already said need to happen.
Well, I think that's such an important point, Rosie. And for anyone listening to today's episode, what the government have said is that they're going to do 2 particular things. The first is to have an investigation of up to 10 of the most concerning maternity and neonatal units in the UK, including Sussex, to give affected families answers as quickly as possible. But secondly, and that relates very much, Rosie, to what you were just saying, they want to undertake a system-wide look at maternity and neonatal care, bringing together lessons from past inquiries to create one clear national set of actions to improving care across NHS maternity services. So on paper, you read that and you think, fantastic, the government's taking action on maternity. But actually, when I read it, I thought you and I chaired this landmark inquiry last year in Parliament with over 1,300 families that gave evidence to us about birth complications and their trauma. And we know from the previous reviews done by Donna Rockenden and to a number of failing trusts that actually I think we have quite a good idea of what the picture is in failings in maternity care. So I suppose the question for me was, why are we doing another report to summarise all of our existing inquiries and reports? And why is he not implementing this stuff now when he has very clear policy recommendations from people like yourself, which could have been implemented this week?
That's how I feel. And anyone that watched your debate, you know, would know that at the time there were quite a few female parliamentarians, and in fact dads as well, who'd gone through this kind of thing ourselves. So just a conversation in the tea room or somewhere quiet with us as representative parents and parliamentarians and people who represent some of the people in these inquiries, so in your case Stafford, in mine East Kent, that's already a huge body of evidence. Like you said, we've had these 1,300 parents. And in a way, it's not just why are we going through this again, but the reality for those parents is they're having to talk about these things over and over and over, almost as though they're the ones on trial. They've been to hell and back, sometimes not back. They're still living with that horrendous trauma and the damage done to them and their children, if they've even got their children after what they went through. And to make them constantly relive it, constantly sort of beg for change in a way by retelling their awful, awful stories, I feel quite angry about that in a way, because we've put them there, you know, you and I had them in front of us and they were incredibly courageous. And these are just the people who feel that they can talk to us kind of, you know, out in the open. Others gave us anonymous stories. I've heard from, and you will have done as well, midwives, people working in maternity units who, in one case I'll never forget, one midwife, a senior midwife, had to have a series of burner phones because she was so frightened of talking to me during the East Kent health inquiry. And I think she wasn't in the end engaged with Bill Kirkup and his team because she was too frightened. So asking people to relive these things over and over and over, what they want, what they need, what we all need, is for action to be taken. And, you know, we always ask for inquiries because the public say that that's what they want, but actually what they really want is action on all of their evidence and the inquiries we've already had. The thing that stays in my mind from Bill Kirkup, and I've seen him since his huge inquiry, is that he kept saying over and over again, if he had to summarise it, all those years of work, it would be listen to women. That's not an enormous thing to do. So yes, let's listen to them, but listening is more than just sitting and listening. It's actioning what they've said and hearing them, you know, so I'd really like that to start, actually.
Well, I agree with everything you just said, Rosie. And for anyone who's not read the report that you and I co-authored last year called Listen to Mums, Ending the Postcode Lottery in Perinatal Care, and here's a little plug for the all-party parliamentary group's important work. But we called it that because we did feel like women were not being listened to by the NHS. And we heard some really shocking stories of lack of compassionate care and where they'd not had the understanding and the help that they should have had. And I'm also struck by what you just said, which is what I personally feel is that is the government just kicking the can down the road by another 6 months? So by having this new synthesis of reports in effect, which won't report to December, it could be said that it's actually failing families by, you know, waiting another half year for anything to happen rather than implementing today the recommendations which we know are policy solutions which could really improve NHS care.
Absolutely. And I like Wes very much. I think he genuinely wants to listen to those people and he's an empathetic person, just a nice human being. But, you know, it is hard as a politician who's heard all this before to really be able to say to your constituents, I know you've told us all of this, but I promise you this time we'll action it. I mean, being in East Kent, I'm still hearing stories that I don't like. I'm still hearing people who were traumatised the first time around, having not hugely different experiences. And, you know, things are potentially still... I know that I've got a really good CEO of my health trust. She's tried so hard to improve things, but there are huge barriers in the way, like money, funding, getting the right doctors, all of the things that we found. It's a systemic change. It's a cultural and social load of changes as well. And all of those things have to start with the government actually taking action. And, you know, we launched our report a year ago. Unfortunately, Wes didn't come to the launch, but we do know that, you know, he's seen a copy of it. I hope he's read your book, because you summarised a lot of that, you know, without having to relive lots of those things. People could just read sections of your book, even just your experience. And we know other colleagues actually have since had babies and had pretty hard times and, you know, haven't spoken about it in public. So everywhere we go, every pregnant woman I know has had a problem. And that's only anecdotal. You know, that's pretty shocking. I don't know anyone that's had just a straightforward, basic, fine time of it, because something hasn't been entirely right. So there is a massive, huge, gigantic problem that we need to solve.
And just looking at the sort of summary from the NHS this week on the new announcement, I note that they said they're also going to establish a national maternity and neonatal task force, which will be chaired by the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care and to be made up of a panel of experts and bereaved families. But he also said that the rapid national investigation should mark a line in the sand for maternity care and have one clear set of actions for NHS leaders to ensure high quality care for all. And I suppose that begs the question of, I was thinking back to you and I campaigning last year, Rosie, with the birth trauma inquiry, that we had one clear headline ask for the then Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, of trying to end this fragmentation and postcode lottery in maternity care. And we called for a national maternity improvement strategy. And I remember standing up in the floor of the House of Commons and getting the Prime Minister to agree to that. And I find it surprising that on Monday, the Health Secretary didn't choose to agree to that cross-party recommendation that we'd made and that the previous government had accepted.
Absolutely. If there was one thing that he or any health secretary could choose, surely it's ending the postcode lottery, because we've seen inquiry by inquiry, you know, we've seen Liverpool, Stafford, Nottinghamshire's coming up, East Kent, and they're all sort of siphoned off as one-off inquiries, and they won't all be exactly the same or find exactly the same failings, but far too many have common threads. You know, we know before reading those inquiries what they're going to say, because we've just done a bit of a deep dive into it. Anyone that's read any of the inquiries or the headlines or anything Donna Ockenden or we found out or the Birth Trauma Association is saying or MASIC knows what we're going to hear. It's the way that patients are fobbed off, patronised, not listened to, you know, women not sort of trusted to know their own bodies, you know, lack of resources, lack of doctors, lack of people on call. All of those things just come up every single time. The way that dads are dismissed and patronised. You know, and we know that stuff already. I don't think we need another 6 months to find it out. And it feels as though, is this a stalling technique because there isn't enough money, or I don't know, nobody's there to, and who's on this task force? You know, I know that you and I haven't been invited to take part in it. Wes did actually write to me, and I'm grateful that he's done that, and said that, you know, he's going to sort of keep me in the loop. But why not ask me and or you to be on that task force? You know, is it because that's politically not expedient, because I'm now no longer in the Labour Party, or I'm seen as a bit of a pain? I don't know. You know, when the East Kent maternity report came through, when Bill Kirkup's final report was published, I was the only Kent Labour MP, and I sat alone on the benches as a health secretary. A health minister was on her own in the front bench, and she wasn't a Kent MP, hadn't liaised with me. None of the people who'd written her lines had liaised with me. And I just sat there listening as I wasn't even mentioned or acknowledged. So, you know, is this political? Is it going to be, you know, to fit a particular agenda? It shouldn't be. It should be open to those of us who've done these things before. Victoria Atkins has done a lot of work on it. Will she be invited because she was the former health secretary? Or is that not seen as politically acceptable because she's now a shadow minister for the Tories in another area? So, you know, I'm a bit sick of politics coming into it and sort of those things not being really something like this. You need to show the public you mean business, you're really serious. Ditch the political kind of boundaries, if you like, and just invite everybody in. You can't have too many people feeding into something like this, I don't think.
And I totally agree with you, Rosie, that maternity care and improving it should be way above party politics. This is something that everyone cares about. And And I hope that they do have a task force which is very representative of all the different groups. And I should add for listeners who are listening to this episode that there has been a statement by the Maternity Safety Group and many of the families involved with the Nottingham inquiry, and they have said that they don't believe that the Health Secretary's announcement goes far enough, because they have been calling for a statutory inquiry into national maternity care. Yeah. And the difference is that that would give it legal teeth and standing to actually be implemented.
And I think that would take the politics away as well, wouldn't it? Because it would mean whoever is the Health Secretary and sort of sets that off, it would have to be followed by the next Health Secretary. And, you know, with all the goodwill in the world, Wes Streeting has a particular term. What we don't want is yet another five-year approach. We want this to carry on. And like I said, I've seen 8 health secretaries. 2 have been the same, you know, and the same person. So we want one long-term approach, I think, and non-party political.
And I think the point about having a statutory inquiry would have been that it would then have to be mandated to be part of legislation and go into law. And yeah. I think that the point that we're discussing now is that, you know, you and I did an inquiry, Donna Rock and Dunstan multiple, there have been many similar reports by the CQC and others, but it's about the implementation now of what those policies are and how to change it. But Rosie, if I could just go back a bit. So you're obviously an MP in Kent. And how did you first start finding out about the postcode lottery and maternity care? Was it in constituency appointments that you started to hear stories from local mums? How did you first start campaigning?
When I needed help after my birth trauma, Erwin Mitchell's team of experts provided the support I needed to rebuild my life.
At Erwin Mitchell, we work closely with our clients through any challenges. We understand the impact of a birth injury and can help get the best medical support and rehabilitation for our clients and their families. Authorised and regulated by the Solicitors Regulation Authority.
Well, I had my babies at Kent and Canterbury Hospital, but when I'd had mine, my last one was 2003, when I'd had mine, I realised it wasn't that long before the maternity unit was completely removed from Kent and Canterbury Hospital. So you can't actually have a baby in a Canterbury hospital anymore and put Canterbury as the birth certificate unless you're having a home birth. So we've got 2 other hospitals that are quite far away from Canterbury, even though it's the most populated area, and that's been controversial. But then I realised other people were having these issues, and that actually I had undergone birth trauma as well. But when I heard the Bill Kirkup inquiry and people started writing to me, I realised it wasn't just isolated incidents and particular constituents who'd come to me. It was part of a much wider historic problem. And that was deeply concerning. And then I started hearing about Stafford, and I started hearing about Nottingham and all those other places, and thinking, this is enormous. And again, there is the taboo. Your book isn't called that for no reason. People don't actually, we're hearing the tip of the iceberg, the people who feel strong enough, I hesitate to say brave enough, because it does take a particular, you know, a particular sort of desire or need or burning sort of, you know, I don't know what it is, sort of courage to talk about this. But it doesn't mean that those who don't talk about it aren't also incredibly brave. They just can't quite do it yet. It is incredibly traumatic, and you know, only when people kind of come out and talk either anonymously or in person to us do we realize that it is enormous, and therefore it should be a huge scandal, and it's not okay.
And it's interesting then to hear you obviously mentioned you had issues with your constituents, but also Rosie, you mentioned about your own experience. And I remember when I first started looking, you know, in the House of Commons to find politicians of different parties to myself who were also interested in campaigning on maternity care, I came across a very powerful speech that you gave, Rosie, a few years before I was elected, where you talked about perinatal mental health. And there was this one sentence you gave which really struck home with me. And you said, if Cinderella had had a third degree tear, Prince Charming would have paid more attention, or something like that. And I burst out laughing at the time, but actually it was a really serious point, right? That women's health does tend to be ignored in policy. Yeah. And that was one of the few debates that I'd found where, you know, a politician had talked about it. And look where we are now, several years later, we're still talking about it. But we need now the government to take action. So would you mind sharing a bit about your experience, Rosie, and why is it that you care so much about improving the experience of new mums?
Yeah, I mean, I had enormous babies and nobody expected that. And I was first pregnant in 1998, I think. And I was a small person, very sort of slim and 27, had a very tall partner, but nobody had sort of picked up on the fact that I was having this enormous baby. And that meant that we weren't really prepared for that. When my waters broke and I was rushed in, the birth was very, very quick and I tore really badly and had to be whisked off to the operating theatre sort of straight away to be sewn up, which meant that, you know, it was treated as a bit of an emergency. They did a really good job, but nothing was able to sort of be explained to me. It was all just very quick. I went into shock because the birth itself was so quick. And this enormous baby was sort of placed on me while I was very drowsy and being rushed off to theatre. So I did go into shock. My mum sort of spotted that I was trembling. My face had gone a funny colour. My lips were blue and I was in physical shock. And I didn't know how to handle that. But also no one ever spoke to me about it. No one really explained what had happened to me, what I'd gone through, asked if I was okay, or treated me as though I'd had a birth trauma. I didn't actually know what it meant until you and I did our APPG. I didn't know the term. And, you know, I've never sort of dealt with it in that sense. I mean, mine was so relatively okay compared to some of the desperate cases that we've heard. And I did end up taking two huge, healthy babies home, but my births were separated by 4 years. And a really similar thing happened the second time. Another big baby and another huge tear. But nobody really even linked the two incidents together. I've certainly had absolutely zero mention of it from anyone involved in any aspect of my healthcare in the last... My oldest son is 26 now. It's never been raised to me. I'm now going through, you know, various issues with the menopause and... It's never been flagged, not once, by any of the GPs I've seen or health specialists. And it's only if I raise it or mention it that people kind of start going, okay. But even that sometimes is dismissed, you know.
Well, Rosie, first, I'm so sorry to hear about your experience. And thank you for talking about it publicly, because I think by people like you and I speaking about it very publicly, particularly in Parliament, you know, it is starting to shift the dial and the public conversation so that hopefully other women are feeling less alone and more listened to, because we have started to break the taboo by speaking about birth injuries, in particular maternal mental health and all these issues which are really kind of covered up in society. And I think for anyone listening to today's episode, you know, if you're suffering from birth trauma, these are things that happened to you, not because of you. And there is support and help out there. And Rose, it might be a good idea to just tell listeners a bit about the campaign that you and I ran. And for anyone who's not come across our campaign before, I decided to go public with my story of my traumatic birth. And I started to research other politicians who had an interest. And that's when I came across Rosie as a member of a different political party to myself. And we decided to set up a new all-party parliamentary group on birth trauma. And some listeners, Rosie, might be less aware of politics and how it works. So do you want to just say a bit about what an APPG is? And obviously you're currently chairing it with another colleague, Rosanna Allen Khan. And what is it that you do?
APPG stands for all-party parliamentary group, which literally means for the purposes of a common cause, all of the political lines are melted. We don't care. You know, you get together. I mean, in fact, actually, it's a requirement of an all-party group to be all-party and to kind of forget that and have a balance between, you know, you need members of all parties to make it relevant, all the major parties anyway. And Rosanna, we had a meeting, a closed meeting a few weeks ago. You know, you don't always know how to talk about those things and where you can raise them. Another really incredibly brave MP who's now left the House, sadly, was Sherilyn McCrory, who we both know well, who talked about baby loss. And, you know, it shouldn't be that we have to go to those places ourselves as MPs, but also at the same time, it really makes a difference. Sherilyn has shared her story and, you know, I've been there in the chamber where you just have to not care about crying, because it's so moving, and she was so brave, and you were so brave, and we did all, you know, we were all very emotional when we heard you talk about it. And you have to do that so that the public can see that they're represented, that they're, we're not going to just leave those things to kind of outside or anonymous emails. And when we do get together as all party parliamentary groups, we're trying to shine a light on these things, but also, more importantly, make a change. And if what we've done has stopped anyone, you know, even one case happening again to someone else, then that's worth it, isn't it? You know, that's what we're there for. It's just really important to, I mean, Wes himself has talked about his own kidney cancer in the hope that other people will kind of check their health and take it seriously. And I'm not saying everyone has to talk about those things. There's loads of things I haven't talked about in Parliament, obviously. But if you choose one or two things and you can reassure the public that you're also a human being, that you also suffer those things, that you're not protected. I mean, the way that you were talked to, despite being an MP, I think was incredibly important, because it shows that, you know, those things do happen. We can prove that they happen. It's not just our constituents, it's everyone. And that particularly stuck with me, the way that you were spoken to so rudely. If there's not even a filter when an MP is being spoken to or dismissed like that, then what on earth happens without us raising it in Parliament? How much more rudely and dismissively do staff sometimes talk to patients? And nobody should ever get an NHS job if they're speaking to a mum who's experienced what you experienced. I think that was one of the things that made me the most angry, the way that our witnesses were spoken to and dismissed, including some who were health professionals themselves and therefore knew even more greatly how things were going wrong. You know, they were almost treated even worse. And we've got to stop that. You know, it's not okay. We're always told that the NHS is free. No, it's not. We all actually pay for the NHS. We pay the salaries of everyone that works for the NHS, from the CEOs downwards. And, you know, you very often don't get rudeness from the porters or the people working as volunteers in the shops. But sometimes the consultants can be incredibly patronising, and we have to stop that.
Yeah, absolutely. And firstly, Rosie very kindly mentioned my book, Breaking the Taboo. But for anyone who's not read it, the point you were making was when I came out of surgery after a postpartum hemorrhage and being stitched up for my birth injury after a very long labour, I was pressing the emergency button for help because I couldn't pick my daughter up. And this NHS professional came in and said, "Not my baby, not my problem," and just walked out and left me there. And I did find that astonishing. And you also mentioned some of our colleagues who've done some fantastic work campaigning, in particular Sherilyn McCrory. And for anyone who's interested in her work on baby loss, we did an episode earlier in the series where we talked to her about her personal experience, which she very bravely shared. But also we talked about pregnancy loss certificates for anyone who's interested in that and how to register for one. And Rosie, I wonder if we could just turn now to talking a bit about the birth trauma inquiry, because firstly, I should say it's still quite unusual in Parliament for MPs to work cross-party on issues. But I feel like you and I did work on a genuinely cross-party campaign. So do you want to just tell listeners about how the birth trauma inquiry came about, and we can talk a bit about the policy recommendations?
Well, as usual with very disorganised people like me, you did all the sort of very organised work, and the Birth Trauma Association kind of went through it line by line and wrote everything for us. And we had the witnesses who'd written to us, who were just ordinary parents, health professionals, dads, people in ethnic minorities who'd been treated specifically badly because of that, and also campaigners. And they came and incredibly bravely, I think it was 8 weeks, wasn't it, our inquiry, kind of the public bit, where they spoke to us as witnesses. And we held that inquiry as though it was a select committee, really. We took all their, you know, statements and were able to question them. And we had various MPs doing that. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever sat through. It was so moving. And I think it made us both incredibly frustrated and angry, as well as really emotional, because none of their stories should have happened, not one of them. But it did allow us to write this huge kind of dossier of evidence, you know, which again, I expect the Health Secretary and his inquiry will pretty much come up with the same stuff, maybe the same witnesses, maybe different witnesses, but there will be the same themes. And, you know, this is happening now in 2025. And although in my area, the Kirkup inquiry did start during lockdown, I had gazillion Zooms with Kirkup and his team and with women who wanted to tell me their story. But it's still happening. You know, this stuff is still happening. And it's okay that in my area they've tried to improve all those things. But, you know, we're seeing Nottingham coming through. And you mentioned Sussex. And I just wonder which other health trusts are going to be the next ones. You know, I don't want that to happen. I want it to stop now. We have to have that baseline level of standards. And we've touched on the OAC care package, which the Birth Trauma Association and MASIC are very involved with. If that was just a standard set of kind of guidelines and principles applied to all hospitals and all health trusts, we know now that St George's are in Tooting are doing an awful lot of those things, but it's not statutory. Like you said, you know, you can opt in and out of those things. We want to introduce those things at a base level, and that's what informed us from making all those recommendations. We wouldn't have been able to do that and have the evidence for it if we hadn't teamed up as an APPG or done that inquiry. But now we can, and the new lot of MPs and me and Rosanna are determined to just carry that on. And I'm really glad that you're still involved in that.
Yeah, and I think it's so important that politicians are firstly talking about birth trauma as an issue. And we can get on to talk about why women's health is not represented enough in parliaments, but just specifically on the inquiry, you know, you and I had called for a national maternity improvement strategy, which the then Prime Minister had agreed to. And I very much hope that in the announcement this week, saying that they will review all of these previous reviews, that will be adopted in December when Wes Streeting reports. But we also had called for a maternity commissioner. And I do think that's really important to have a dedicated person whose job it is to report to the Prime Minister specifically on maternity care. And for anyone who's not read our reports, I'll just pick out a couple of the highlights of our recommendations. But our first was, of course, to recruit, train and retain more frontline staff, so midwives, obstetricians and anaesthetists. And we know that we've got to have safer levels of staffing in maternity care. We wanted to have universal access to specialist maternal mental health services to end the postcode lottery. We wanted to have a separate 6-week checkup post-delivery with your GP for all mums. And that's something I campaigned a lot on, to have separate questions for the mother as well as the baby for their physical and mental health. To roll out the obstetric and anal sphincter injury care bundle to hospital trusts, which Rosie just mentioned. Have a national standardised post-birth service for you to speak about your experience. Better education for mums on birth choices, respecting mothers' birth choices and access to pain relief and keeping them with their baby, providing support for fathers and better continuity of care and digitising the mum's health records, and committing to tackling racial inequalities in maternity care, and finally commissioning research on the economic impact of birth trauma and injuries. So it's a very comprehensive report. I mean, it's more than 80 pages with more than 40 policy recommendations. So Rosie, are you hopeful after this week's announcement from Wes Streeting that he might actually read this report and implement the findings of those families that bravely gave evidence to us in Parliament last year?
I really hope so, because basically we've done loads of the work for him and his department, you know, and it's already there in black and white. And, you know, we did things after the report and during the report, like we went to see a bereavement suite, because if the absolute worst of the worst happens, some places don't even, or haven't even traditionally, set parents aside. You know, there's sometimes, women are sometimes forced to be on a maternity ward, hearing babies crying if the absolute worst possible nightmare has happened and they've lost their child. You know, so even just the most basic kind of kindnesses, you know, need to be put into place. And, you know, I do anything, and the same for you, to rewind some of the things that parents in my constituency have been through. If we can stop any one of those people having to have, you know, a terrible, terrible experience. And particularly, I mean, you know, we've heard from South Asian women whose experiences are so much worse. Consistency, the statistics are absolutely shocking. You know, black women being four or five times more likely to go through the worst possible thing. And why? 2025, why? You know, and I know that the government have said to us, haven't they, that they're really, that's their number one focus. But it has to go with everything else, because otherwise that's just going to carry on. You know, you can't just isolate, I don't think, some of the worst possible things, because it's all tied together with staffing levels and proper funding and just care generally and aftercare, the six-week check. You know, it's not all just about the baby's health. It has to be about the mother's health. That silly tick box thing doesn't necessarily show postnatal depression, all those things. And you can blag those if you're not sure about what you're going through and you're frightened to admit it. It's really easy to get away with that in a way. And actually what we should be saying is, instead of stigmatising those women, this is the help you need. And men, who's asking the men, the fathers, how they're coping? You know, we know fathers who just get dismissed and sent off and are supposed to look after the baby and the mother and not have any help themselves. So there's so much that needs to change.
And just listening to you talk about all these things, Rosie, it really makes me think we need to have more women elected in Parliament to be talking about these issues. I remember when I was an MP looking at the Women's Health Strategy, I think I made an assumption that it was a kind of annual publication and this was just the latest statistics. And then I remember going to the library and they said, no, this is the first ever that had been published by a government. So just to sort of wrap up on policy, why do you think it is that women's health has been so traditionally ignored, really, in policy in the House of Commons?
Very good question. I mean, when I came to Parliament in 2017, I was the 487th, I think, woman politician to file through the line to be registered. So that's where the number comes from. And that is after around about 5,000 men. So if you think about that statistic, it's a bit better now. It's still shockingly poor. So we're still pioneers. We're still making those firsts. And ours was a first, even though it was only a year ago. You know, when I got to Parliament, the first thing I thought was women's health. I've got to talk about women's health above everything else. And there are tons of other things, but that's been my kind of laser focus in various different areas. And thankfully, having more women now means that there are quite a lot of different groups about maternal health, which is something I never thought I'd see. It's amazing. It's a great problem to have, you know, and what I'd like is for us to all get together. And we are starting to do that with birth trauma and maternal health in particular. I think we have to just park any adversarial politics, you know, forget that and just put women and mothers first. You know, it's essential, otherwise we won't get anything done.
I absolutely agree. And I remember when I was looking up similarly about the number of women who'd given birth whilst elected, I was only the 56th MP in history to have had my baby whilst being a sitting MP. And I think it goes back to the heart of the problem why we're not talking about these issues, because Parliament is just not representative of that demographic.
But look at the way you were treated for being a woman MP who was pregnant, not just locally by, you know, and politically. But I remember Siobhan Bailey as well, who sadly lost a seat as well in 2024, who was essentially bullied online and by some people who assumed that she couldn't be a mother or be pregnant and do her job. Extraordinary. Why not? We don't assume that about a man who's going through cancer treatment or something, you know, but a woman doing what women largely do and have babies and try and juggle a career is still bullied, which is mind-blowing. Got to stop that.
Well, Rosie, we're coming towards the end of the episode, so I'd like to ask you my two questions that I always ask every guest while you're with us. And the first is an easy one for you as a sitting politician. What is the one thing that you'd like the Prime Minister to do to improve maternity care?
I think just do any of the recommendations, but particularly the postcode lottery. I never want to see another family go through the things that those families that have talked to us have gone through. So please just implement the recommendations. We've done the hard work. That would be great.
Brilliant. And you've obviously met a huge number of charities and campaigners. Are there any particular groups that you'd like to signpost families listening to today's show to that they might find useful for recovery
and healing?
The Birth
Trauma Association. Birth Trauma Association, every time. It's not a big, well-funded charity with, you know, expensive headed paper or publications. You know, it doesn't have free badges to give out because they just can't afford to. But they do occasionally come into Parliament. And, you know, it's, as usual, a volunteer-led organisation. It's very small, but they are there on the end of the phone for anyone who needs them. Just pick up the phone and talk to them. And if any donors are listening, please fund them, you know, because they really need as much money and as much resource as possible.
Well, I absolutely echo those comments about the Birth Trauma Association, and I'll put a link to the charity in our show notes today for any women who don't know about it. Well, Rosie, thank you so much for coming on today's special episode. And I think it's really obviously helpful to see the government talking about maternity. But I think as we've discussed today, there is a lot of talk, but not enough action. And I think we now need the government to take concrete steps on improving policy in the NHS. So watch this space. Let's see what the government comes up with in December. And let's hope that they consider very seriously the recommendations that we had in our report for the UK's Birth Trauma Inquiry. Well, for anyone who's enjoyed today's episode on Breaking the Taboo, please do rate us on Spotify or Apple iTunes, and also do refer the episode to friends, family or colleagues. We want to reach as many affected mums as possible to get them the help and the support that they need. So stay tuned for next week's episode of Breaking the Taboo. Bye-bye for now.